This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Brian Hallblyde.
What is up, everyone? As Johnny M. said, I'm your host, Brian Hallblyde. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Thank you so much. Coming to you back from the home studio in Pennsylvania. As I mentioned last episode, recharged and ready to rock from a great week out west. Not a whole lot to report this week. Just catching up with work and catching up with family. I had hoped to get out at least a day or two to chase some Canada geese for that early season. It's still open for a couple of more days. That still may happen, but just haven't had a chance to get back out. So just kind of making plans for the weekend. We have a veteran hunt on Saturday for big ducks. That'll be my first opportunity to hunt big ducks this year. I'm going to go do some scouting on Friday. I've got most of the day to myself Friday, so I should be able to hopefully find some birds. We had quite a few resident mallards hanging around with some of those Canada geese that I've been scouting. So might have an opportunity to to get on some mallards. Always a good opportunity to get into some wood ducks for sure. Anytime you get out early season, that's usually going to be part of your bag here in Pennsylvania. But a few more projects I got to get finished. I'm still messing around with the boat project. I'd like to get that done. Be nice to have that for October, hunting some of the rivers and the bigger waters. Started putting some grass and raffia on my kayak, on my Northern Flight blind. I got to get that finished up. I've also got the Drake ghillie blind, the collapsible portable blind that I'm going to get some of the raffia grass put on, the ghillie grass, and a couple other things just to wrap up before Big Duck gets here. It actually opens in October on the 12th. We got that opportunity with the vet hunt this Saturday, but then it's going to be kind of quiet around here for a couple of weeks. So hopefully I'll be able to get all these little projects wrapped up and get everything ready to rock for Big Ducks. Not a whole lot else to catch you up on. This episode, I'm going to be talking to Elliot Snyder from Freelance Duck Hunting and the North American Waterfowler Podcast. Actually had an opportunity to record this episode at his home while I was staying out there and hunting with him in Kansas. We had a really good time, really good hunt. I'm still going through a couple of hunts, actually. I'm still going through all of my video footage from the trip. Some good, some bad. Kind of working my way through the learning curve of the new camera equipment. And got the first video from the Nebraska trip up on the YouTube channel. Kind of a, I guess you call it an introductory breakdown of kind of my drive out there and a little bit of hunting and my spot at the camp. I think it turned out pretty good. Like I said, I'm trying to get better. Picked up a lot of tips watching Elliot and how he manages his filming throughout the hunt. And, you know, just kind of trying to find my own way of doing things. You know, I want to have, you know, kind of like I've been trying to find my voice on this podcast. I want to kind of find my own unique way to present everything on the YouTube channel as well. So do me a favor, if you hadn't seen that yet, go over to the YouTube channel, check out the Nebraska hunt. I've got a dove hunt on there as well. I've also got a video breaking down my mobile duck rig, living out of my truck while I was on that trip out west, walk around video. Send me some feedback, leave some comments, let me know what you think, good, bad, or ugly. Like I said before, I just want to kind of simultaneously bring you some good content and stuff that you guys want to see while telling it my way, telling the way that I like to tell stories. So we will keep working on that. And like I said, that's going to be about it. Want to take a second to mention the partners. Bluebird Waterfowl, man, George has been killing it. I've been seeing his ads everywhere. Lots of comments, lots of people posting using the animator with their spinning wing decoys. I've had a chance to take that on my hunts this year, getting really comfortable and quick setting up with it. It's so easy to use, and really looking forward to putting it to use in Big Duck. Really cool product. If you haven't seen Bluebird Waterfowl Animator, you can go over to bluebirdwaterfowl.com. He's also in a lot of suppliers, a lot of outdoor stores. If you go to the website, I'm sure he's got a list of dealers and everything else there, but definitely check them out. George jumped on board just about right away from the beginning when we started this podcast. He believed in us. We believe in his product, and just two small waterfowl businesses trying to work together to push each other forward. So appreciate it if you'd go support him. It's risk-free. If you get his product, you don't like it, give him a call. He'll replace it or get you something else or give you your money back if you're not happy with the animator system. So nothing to lose. And make sure you tell him you heard about him on the Migration Waterfowl podcast. That helps me continue to be partners with these great companies and continue to bring you free content. This episode is also brought to you by the Duck Hole and Company, Attracting Feathers Together. They're a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, contact them through any of their social media platforms at the Duck Hole Company. They can also fix you up with golden millet, also known as the duck buffet, and the best bang for your duck. This episode is also brought to you by CK Custom Calls, custom built in the USA from the great state of Texas, handmade in a world of mass produced. Check out their calls on their Instagram and Facebook pages at CK Custom Calls. They showcase calls for sale there, and you can also contact them for a custom order. He's been working on those duck and goose calls for me that I sent him a chunk of Pennsylvania cherry wood. He sent me some video of working on them, and man, I'm excited. Can't wait to check those things out. Can't wait to put them to use, and just really looking forward to that. So go over there and support them. Get yourself a couple of calls, and again, let them know you heard about them on the Migration Waterfowl podcast. There's also some free ways that you can support us. Like I've mentioned a bunch of times before, please tell your waterfowl hunting family and friends that may not have heard about our podcast. That's one of the best ways you can help us grow. You can also take a minute and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Don't forget, if you send me a message after you leave the review, I'll send you a Migration Waterfowl podcast decal. And like I mentioned, on this episode, I'm going to be talking with Elliot Snyder from Freelance Duck Hunting. He's also the host of the North American Waterfowler podcast, and he also is the creator of the North American Waterfowler app. It's fantastic tracking and hunting log data. Spread. It's basically a hunting log, a spreadsheet, all that stuff that you used to do separately, handwritten journals. It's all in one app now. It saves you a ton of time. It's fun to do. There's a community board on there. You can create groups, keep track of your numbers with your hunting buddies. You can see what the global community is doing across the country. And just a really cool way to keep track of your shooting percentages. I mean, there's so many options on there. When I start to talk about this thing, I forget about a bunch of it. But just make sure you go over there, check it out, support Elliot. He's got a great show, great podcast, great YouTube channel. We need more guys like him in this sport, and that helps him continue to bring good content and helps him to keep glorifying God and you know, sharing his faith and just some amazing hunts over there. So check that out if you haven't had a chance to do that. I had a chance to hunt with Elliot 2 days in a row Spent some time at his house in Kansas. Can't thank him enough for his hospitality. His family was super inviting and welcoming, welcomed me into their home. And just a great experience. Really blessed that God had our paths cross, and just, you know, really had a great time getting to know him in person after talking to him for a long time over phone and text message and emails and Marcos. But I think you're really going to enjoy this one. We're going to kind of recap our hunts and talk a little bit about our camping and our faith. And I just appreciate you all coming back today for this episode. Thank you, Lord, for blessing us to meet up again for another episode. So let's get into episode 22. Welcome back to another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, coming to you from Northeast Kansas tonight. I've got my friend Elliot Snyder from Freelance Duck Hunting, also known as the North American Waterfowler, his podcast. If you haven't heard of that, make sure you check that out and his YouTube channel. But I'm sure most of you have all know about Elliot's content by now. How's it going tonight, Elliot?
It's going good. I had a fun day today. Ready for another one tomorrow.
Yeah, so that was a nice change of pace from coming down from Nebraska and kind of getting into some different landscapes and seeing some new setups and something different that I've been doing for the last 5 days. What was your approach for choosing this spot here?
Well, I had been scouting this. I do a lot of off-season scouting, and so I'd been scouting this place since early July. I've been there four or five times. The whole area, I just have kept really close track on. And every time I've been to this place, it has had teal. Even early August, you could have shot a one or two man limit in there. Maybe not early August, but mid August for sure. There have been birds there consistently, and more so than any of the other places that of the area that I had scouted. So it was kind of has been the A spot since for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Okay. So after the scouting and not to jump too far ahead, but after what we saw today, were you pretty pleased with your decision for us to go there today?
Oh, absolutely. I scouted it. I've been nervous all week. I've been obsessing all week because my wife and I took a boat ride last Sunday evening just to get another quick scout in. And the place I really wanted to be didn't have any birds. And then the place that I say I really wanted to be because it's just a fun, easy place to hunt. Less traffic there, but there's just been no birds at that particular spot. So we looked at that, no birds. Then we went to this spot, and I really wanted to, my number one goal was to check water level because sometimes water just evaporates faster than you think it's going to. It just does weird things. It's hard to predict. So I really wanted to just see what the water levels were doing. But in doing so, the whole area, I was not seeing any. I saw two blue-wing teal on that whole scout. And so I walked into this place, and I literally walked in, saw the water levels, walked out. But because it just felt like there wasn't birds in the air, because I only saw two, I just had in my mind that there weren't any birds in there. And so I have been stressing all week about where to go, what to do, what to hunt. I mean, way too much, like painfully thinking about it. And then finally, I was just like, hey, this is the A spot. We're going to go to the A spot. It's been the A spot for weeks. Just relax. We're going to go there. And there was more movement than what even I would have thought, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that struck me, it reminded me a little more of some of my marshes back home.
No one would think that's Kansas if you just took pictures
right,
of it.
Right. Yeah, it really surprised me, especially after what I'd been hunting for the last 5 days before I got here.
Fun change of pace because for sure. That's kind of my world. It's like those two environments that you've been in this week, that's really my waterfowl world. I bounce between those two environments, and they complement each other really, really well in beauty and hunting feel.
Sure. So Aiden kind of explained, answered a lot of my questions about why the teal are where they are in Nebraska. So this particular spot, what is it that's so attractive to the flocks of teal that they like to spend time there this time of year?
It's got to be invertebrates. I mean, there's decaying cattails in there. So we had a lot of water over the summer, killed some cattails. And so all of those in there was dead cattails. So with the decomposition of it, I would assume that you just get way more insects, way more invertebrates. Because really, that stuff is deeper than teal like, but it must just be jam-packed full of invertebrates.
Okay. Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, was it was quite a bit deeper than what I've heard about teal hunting, and quite a bit deeper than what we had in Nebraska. So that makes a lot of sense.
But I think that does answer some questions as to why the teal acted the way they did today.
Okay.
As well, because...
Yeah, we'll get to that for sure. So we started out with a little scouting trip there last night, and I found it interesting that, you know, just hearing a couple of birds, based on your experience, you kind of know the multiplier. So we heard, you know, three or four different types of quacks, saw a couple of, you know, wing flutters and a couple of heads here and there. But you were still a little bit nervous even after that.
Right. I had because I'd been stressing out all week, and I just get this feeling like you ever go fishing and you're not getting any bites and it feels like there's no fish in the whole lake.
Mm-hmm.
Like that feeling.
Okay.
Since the Sunday, that's the feeling that I had. And I'd gotten reports of birds blowing out because we had two nights in the 40s, which we never have in September. I don't ever remember having multiple nights in the 40s in September. I'm sure we have, but I don't recall it. And I was getting multiple reports from people that birds were blowing out of places, like all through Nebraska was losing numbers. And I know that you guys did get a push on one of those evenings. And so the information I was getting across Nebraska combined with this is the least number. I only saw two teal on that whole scout, which before, even like I said, mid-August, I was seeing 100, 150 teal on those scouts. So putting the pieces together, I was like, man, these birds all blew out of here. They blew out of here. That was my fear. But when we started hearing those quacks, oh, that made me feel so much better when we started hearing those little blues singing to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So my first experience being in a marsh and hearing just a couple of quacks, I would have thought, you know, maybe there's a handful of ducks in there, but you kind of had a different input based on your experience that if you see a few and hear a few, it usually means a lot more.
Yeah, like no other duck blue wings can hide. And I've had multiple times where I'm walking around in an ankle to calf deep marsh and I'm like, there's no birds here. And I get within 20 yards of them and like 50 just bust up. I mean, they're masters at hiding. They're masters at being really quiet. Like you notice all through the night, we never heard them at all.
Right.
And that's now if you get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, you're going to hear them all through the night. There's just so many of them. It may make them feel safer. But I've always felt like during those witching hour times, they're quiet. Especially they're not in open water, you know, where they're like in high vegetation water, and I'm guessing that it's safest for them just to keep their mouth shut. So a lot of times you don't even start hearing the quacking until hour before. If you're talking at like 100 less birds, until an hour before sunrise. And so when we heard the amount of quacking that we heard, and knowing that they're just masters of hiding, when you hear that amount of quacking, you can put a great multiplier on it. I've just had so many experiences where evening scouts with blue wings, you're discouraged, and then boom, in the morning, there's way more than you thought. That is, to me, seems to be isolated to the blue wing teal. And I don't know about blue and green wings. Other ducks, I don't have those experiences, but for some reason, blue wings, it just happens a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. And one thing that stood out to me was as we watched them through sunset, I was expecting to see at least a few flying around, and they just didn't do that there.
I have no idea why, because my dad and I were in there. I'm trying to think when it was. The third week of August, my dad and I were in there, and we sat for 45 minutes. Well, actually, we sat longer than that. We sat about the last hour till about 15 minutes before sunset. And there was constant little movements, little groups moving around. There was wood ducks. There was teal. I don't know why there was just no flying movement at all. That was strange to me and worrisome to me. I don't think that – I mean, blue wings will definitely move more in the mornings than they do in the afternoons. But that's just not what I had been seeing previously. So right. I was having – this whole blue wing trip was a lot of, like, head-scratching moments as far as blue wings go.
Yeah, and this was on public land, so we were planning on going in and setting up camp and, you know, trying to not so much secure the spot, but just be camped close enough where we can get in there pretty easy the next morning. Walk us through that camping setup you have. That was, you know, pretty impressive. I know you kept making comments about having too much stuff in the boat, but honestly, you know, with three people moving that in a short distance, it was a really comfortable camp.
It was, and the Camprite tent cots are kind of the key because they're not heavy. You can carry two, probably even three of them, and they go up so easy. To me, I hate setting up tents. I don't know what it is. It's always like twisting those dumb poles, making them bend around. I absolutely hate it. So with the Camprite tent cot, it opens up everything. My dad and I have done this for years. There's like one overnights. First of all, I'm so obsessive and neurotic about it. If I'm worried about getting my spot, I'm not going to sleep well. And I'm going to be a nervous wreck until I have my spot secured. So I'm going to end up getting up way too early, and I'm still going to be just a wreck until I'm in the spot. So for me, going in there and setting up a little one-night camp where you're on the spot and having a nice little time, we cooked a meal, all of that tension that I would have had just fades away. Even when there was other people in the area kind of, you know, in the morning, I have that anxiety flare up a little bit, but still we're on the spot, right?
Right.
And it's just so much easier for me, I get better sleep that way. And it's just more that night was so enjoyable. I mean, you just can't beat it. So it's really not, I'm going to sleep on the spot and I'm going to stay up all night. It's not really it. It's like, you know, get there, have a nice evening, have a nice little camp out and be relaxed and get better sleep.
Yeah. You talk a lot on your podcast about adventure and full immersion.
Right.
And, I got a taste of that. And, you know, I think along the same lines as you bring up all the time about, you know, as men, and it's kind of in our DNA to need that adventure and need that escape from this, you know, rat race that we find ourselves in. So I really appreciate you making that happen for me and really enjoyed the time with you and your stepson and a delicious meal that your wife cooked. And just hanging out by the fire and, you know, catching up and getting to know each other. It was really, really special. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, too. I'm glad that you came down there. It would have been better had we stayed. I think 24 hours is of immersing yourself in that, because there were still ducks flying when we left.
Oh, yeah.
Even when I laid down there for a second and had whatever I was laying it against, and I could see ducks flying over the marsh. And it was a little too warm for us to do it, but ideally that 24 hours where you do hunt. And I think, like, for a quick one, get there around 1 o'clock, set up a little campsite, evening hunt, sleep, morning hunt, make lunch, go home. So it's about a 24-hour.
Right.
Is really, really enjoyable thing to do. I don't do it a ton. But it's something I haven't done for about 3 or 4 years, and I've really been wanting to do it. And so now it's mid-September. I've done it 3 times. So yeah. I had been itching to. Well, and those tent cots make it so easy. Honestly, the tent cots
super
is the
comfortable.
Big difference.
Yeah,
it's the big difference.
Absolutely.
Because either if like the three of us are going to sleep there without the tent cots, you're going to have to bring a big tent or three of those little bivvies that I have, which really kind of suck compared to the, you know, they're not as comfortable.
Right.
And so that really has opened up the ability for me to do, because I bought those. I've got three of those little bivvies because we had two tent cots and then I didn't have three, so I brought a little bivvy. I have three of those bivvies because that was my plan to do more of those. But it's ultimately, as I'm 50, it's just not, it's not comfortable enough for me to want to do it a lot.
Sure.
This, than the tent cots are. So, yeah, it's a fun time.
Yeah, definitely. We had a great night. And then next morning we got up and got our stuff together, headed into the marsh. And, yeah, like we talked about before, the water was a little bit deeper than I expected, a little bit deeper than what I'd been experiencing for teal. And kind of covered why they wanted to be in there with the invertebrates, you think.
Because the first time that I found them in that place, it was even deeper. It was probably 6-7 inches deeper.
Oh, wow.
And as I was walking through that marsh, because I walked the whole thing the first time I was in there, and I was thinking, oh, man, this is just too deep. And then I boiled up about 50 right out of where we set up.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow. Because I assumed my experience is, like, knee to thigh deep water is not what blue wings want. And so when, especially you get up to like that thigh deep, which is what it was when I was before there, I'm like, well, they're not coming in here. But they were. So it just has to be easy access to invertebrates. It has to be.
Okay. So let's talk about the setup. We had north or northeast wind, you said?
Basically no wind, but we had a little bit of a northeast wind.
Okay. And what was your thought process for our setup there?
Apparently, my thought process was to set up the decoys way too close to us. Well, so where I had seen them wanting to be was actually kind of behind where we set up.
Right.
But there was – so this is dead cattails, and they can be very thick in some areas. But where they had been sitting, where it wasn't – it was kind of open, but a lot of still vegetation. So I didn't want to set up exactly where they were because I didn't want to lose a bunch of birds. So the thought was, is we set up right on the edge as that thinning area where they had been sitting met the open pool. Because a lot of times birds will land at the edge and swim in. So I wanted to be visible, which this didn't really work either, because how many times do we have birds early swing right back around behind us and kind of land back behind us over our head? So, I mean, no one listen to this and take this as the way to do it. Fundamentally, the setup sucked, I think. But this is the reason. There was rhyme and reason to it. So it was visible out in the pool as close to where I thought they wanted to sit as possible. So I really don't want to set up back in there farther because it just – the opportunity to lose birds is outweighs me wanting to do that.
True.
And with blue wings, normally you got decoys, you got spinners. They that's all you need.
Right.
Not these blue wings today, though.
Yeah, so we heard a couple of boats come up. One group got set up, and it sounded like they were having a great day. They got started a little bit better than we did, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, it was kind of slow for what? First, I don't know. What was that?
20 minutes?
Yeah, I'd say 20
minutes. I was worried because we weren't seeing anything.
Yeah.
We weren't seeing anything.
And I remember.
Weird. That's so weird. I don't know why. Maybe it was those guys shooting.
And I remember you saying how quiet it was. And then, all like, as soon as you said that, those guys started banging and it seemed like they just.
Because no one was shooting.
Banging, right.
Yeah, right. No, like you got 10, 15 minutes in, and no one in the whole complex had shot. And I'm thinking, I remember I was like, uh-oh, this is not good. Right. No one's shooting. We're not seeing anything. And right, once those guys started shooting, again, I don't know, it just everything changed.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It was kind of strange. We had, instead of the ducks coming in to our spinners in front of us, we had them dive bombing us over our shoulders almost. And yeah. I got treated to that F-15 sound pretty quickly after that. Never gets old hearing that.
Right.
But, yeah, kind of walk us through. We shot a few birds, and then we just felt like we were too close, like we were too tight to our hole.
We did have a couple of real nice groups come in first. But I set the spinner up at 15 yards, and the thought and hope was that they would land in front of the spinner and land anywhere between 17 to 25 yards. That's kind of the range I want to kill them. But, and the first group I think kind of did that. It was still, but the groups we did have come in, they just came in beyond that And I don't even know that they were really ever actually putting feet down, the few groups that we had. It was like they'd come right at us, and then when they hit the spinners, they were still moving pretty quick, and they were just kind of darting and dodging through the decoys, through the spinners, really low and right off the water. But not like none of those groups that came in just like plopped and settled down. It was like take them right as they were coming over the spinners. I wonder if they were maybe planning on landing over behind us, maybe, to where they really want. Well, I don't know, because I think we kind of figured out where they wanted to be as the day went up, and it wasn't where we were.
Yeah, it was interesting because it's like they almost gave you the impression that they were going to pump those brakes and you would start to set up your shot for that, and then they would go right back into full flight again. It was pretty frustrating for a couple of passes there for sure.
Yeah, and as close as it was, you know, so now you're talking, you know, we're saying take them at 20 to 15 yards and they're still moving towards us. So it was kind of rough shooting. And we didn't have tons of those. I think we had probably two or three groups do that. And then other than that, it was like singles and doubles.
Yeah. Yeah, so we decided after we shot a couple of birds and saw that it wasn't quite working the way we wanted to, we decided to shift the setup a little bit.
Right. So at that time, we were knocking some birds down. So Brian jumped to like had two birds, and then Elijah got to two, and then I got to two. So we had, I think, about two birds each. I think you took a third one. So we were at seven birds before we moved anything, because there was a lot of activity. They were just not really acting how we wanted them to act. And so some of them were – this pool is kind of set up, if you think of it, as kind of an oval. It seemed like singles and doubles landing over in this one area. So Elijah picked up three decoys, went over to a stool to sit over there. And that's when Brian and I were still having teal kind of act like they wanted to come in, but act like they were seeing us, act like almost sometimes acting like they were flaring off the spinners, working the edge of the pool instead of the center of the pool, doing everything but coming right in the way we wanted them to.
Right.
And we were still taking one here and there, and the movement was better than we had expected a great deal. But so what we felt like, man, because I'm all into not worrying about hiding for blue wings, because you normally just don't need to. But these blue wings really seemed like they either didn't like the spinners, didn't like where we were sitting, were seeing us, or a combination of that. So we moved ourselves back away from the spinners and off to the side. So as they approached, they wouldn't be looking right at us, and we would be looking sideways on the decoys and spinners instead of straight into it. We didn't really move. We moved one spinner over a little bit and threw a few decoys out. But more than anything, we moved ourselves off to the side and gave a little more space in between us and the decoys, which really didn't seem to matter.
No, that was going to be my next point. That little bit of a shift, hoping to make them change their landing, they just kept doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Coming in, acting like they were going to set down, and then darting off. It was interesting.
Just circling the pool.
Yeah.
Just circle. There was so many birds that just kind of circled the pool.
Yeah. Doing laps like.
Normally, the blue wings, you got decoys, you got spinners, you got kills.
Right.
But not these ones. Not that we weren't killing anything, but for the number of teal, I would say almost every time that you have that number of birds coming into that small pool, you're going to shoot a three-man limit. No problem.
Sure.
Because there was plenty of birds.
Absolutely, yeah.
Compared for what you would typically need for a three-man limit.
Right. And it just got better from there. I mean, we were seeing good numbers once it got started, but we called like a last call, 15 minutes, let's give it 15 more minutes. And then a bunch of groups would come in and we're like, okay, let's give it another 15 minutes.
Yeah, like come into the pool, not into our decoys.
Right, right.
And we'd think that they would circle and like look like they're coming right towards us. And a lot of them would just skirt 50 yards, 60 yards off to the sides over and over and over.
Yeah.
Time and time again, which is at least it's cool because you have a game, but frustrating nonetheless.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as frustrating as it was, we still managed to knock down quite a few. You got your limit.
Yep.
And I forget what the total was.
I had six, you had three, Elijah had two.
Okay.
and we lost one other than other.
Right. So,
yeah. With real efficient shooting, we could have got it done, but the shooting just wasn't ideal.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough shots. So let's talk about your switching up to 20 gauge, right?
Well, before we do that, I do want to say about the loons, what I think was happening is that this pool had gone down 4 or 5 inches over the time I've been scouting it. And so it seemed like a lot of these blue wings were landing on the edges and swimming even farther out. And I think that they were really trying to seek out that shallower water was ultimately what they were doing.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like.
Is they were flying the edges of this thing because that's where the shallow water was. And when you saw them landing, they weren't landing in the knee-deep water. They were landing on the edges. I think that they were just getting more comfortable with their water depth is ultimately the biggest thing. Is that they just wanted to be on those edges.
Yeah, that's right. Because towards the end there, Elijah took a walk to see if he could jump a few, and he ended up jumping quite a few out of the shallows there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But we managed to have a great day. Got quite a few birds down, even though the shooting wasn't the greatest. Shooting opportunities weren't the greatest, I should say. But, yeah, I want to get into... You kind of switched it up this year. You're shooting a 20 gauge now.
Right. I'm shooting the Weatherby Element, which is kind of one of their flagship models. It's been around for a long time. And it's the first 20 gauge I've shot for waterfowl hunting. And day one, I'm in love with that thing, the less recoil. And it's just, I just love how it feels. It fits me perfectly. It's only one day, but just I'm absolutely in love with shooting that 20 gauge after day one.
Yeah, I could see why. And you also are using flight day ammunition.
Right. So I used Boss probably 5 years ago for 2 years. And now I had been using steel before that, but now I'm using flight day ammunition, which is made by my friend Ben Myers, flightdayammo.com. You can get 10% off with FDH10 over there. But yeah, I can't even – normally my goal coming out of teal season, because I keep track of my shooting percentage on my app, the North American Waterfowler app, and not a lot of people love or are willing to do what it takes to keep your shooting percentage. You have to track your shells.
Right.
And a lot of people just don't want to do that, which is fine. But I really like doing it, and it's been a goal of mine. And since I've really been focused on my shooting percentage – I've gone from a mid-40s shooter to a high-50s shooter, from just focusing on becoming a better shot, taking a better shot selection. And so I've really been able to be more accurate through it. So my goal coming out of till season always, if I hope to be high-60s, 70%, which is really, really good. And after four hunts, I can't even believe I'm 90%. 17 out of – or I guess it would be – I thought it was 17 out of 20, but because I lost one. So I'm basically 18 out of 20, right. Which it's crazy. I'm not that good a shot. So I don't know if it's the combination of the bismuth. I can tell you I made shots today that I wouldn't have killed with steel.
Yeah.
For certain.
Yeah. And due to the conditions like we talked about and what the birds were giving us, there was a couple of shots that I could see that you kind of step back and kind of were like, I don't know if I should have taken that shot, but you had great marks.
Mm-hmm.
You did your due diligence, made sure you watched where those birds went down, and you got an incredible dog.
She did the job today for sure. Yeah. I was real fortunate though, because they sailed and I got to them and they were dead. I had good marks there was two ones in particular where they landed in a way where it was just like an easy way to mark it.
Mm-hmm.
And one was probably 250 yards,
yeah,
maybe, and went right over to it. Georgie found them, and so I thought on both those I was going to lose the birds,
yeah.
But right over, she picked them up. And the bismuth is what, like, I probably could have sailed them with steel, but I got to them and they were dead.
Yeah, that was an impressive thing that they were stone dead.
Yeah, because you saw how they were. No, the second one I felt like he was dying, but the other one I didn't think that he would be dead,
right?
And he was, so I think that's bismuth over steel.
Sure.
It's just a better ammunition. So I'm a little more expensive, but if you're shooting less, I didn't shoot a single cleanup shot on the water today.
Right.
I shot six shells. And so I would love to track number of shells shot, which isn't a shooting percent. It's just of shells per bird ratio, and see the difference between steel and bismuth. I'm suspecting that bismuth is not near as extra an expense as people think it is, because you shoot less cleanup shots.
That's a good point.
And I'm sure it's still more expensive, but not as more expensive as people think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was impressive to watch how that stuff hit those birds. I've been shooting steel for a long time and never really dabbled in the bismuths, but I'm definitely impressed with watching that and have to look into that for sure.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Flight day ammo.
So, like I mentioned before, we kind of were getting later in the day and we had some other places we wanted to scout and some other things that we wanted to do. So we just kept calling another 15 minutes, and it seemed like more and more ducks started coming in, flying over that pool.
I know. When we were actually hit the edge of the pool, I looked back and I'm like, I can't believe we're leaving.
Right.
Because, I mean, the movement just got better and better. And that was kind of like, it just subtly happened, because we start packing up, we're going to leave. There's a group, because it had died down pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we were kind of in the whole pack-up process, it's getting more and it's getting more. By the time we left, it just felt like there was ducks flying all over the place, and we're walking away.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Instead of making I guess probably what we should have done a little earlier is just make a big shift.
Yeah.
Not just a little shift, is go down and set up on, you know, where we talked about setting up. At some point, we said, all right, there's plenty of birds flying. Let's make a big move. It wouldn't have taken us but 20 minutes to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't have a whole lot invested as far as numbers of decoys, a couple of spinners.
It would have been pretty easy.
Yeah, but all in all, it's a fantastic day. I really appreciate you sharing that spot with me and sharing the hunt. Really enjoyed my time back there and got me 4.5 hours closer to home since I left Nebraska. Plus, it kind of looked a little more like home. So
yeah,
it was kind of nice. Nice change.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you could come out and hunt with me. It's been fun. We got one more day on it, and hopefully we'll have a good one. Well, I don't know what to expect. I expect us to kill 7 or 8 at least.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if we don't go out there and kill 6 to 10, and who knows.
So is this going to be something similar to what we hunted today, or is this going to be a completely different setup?
It's going to be quite a bit different. So there's a hill with deciduous trees all over it. And then right below that hill, it fills with water, and that water spreads out over a field. So it's going to be quite a bit different. The place we were today was enclosed, and this place does not feel enclosed.
Okay.
It's a wall on one side of trees with a hill, but it does not feel enclosed. It feels open.
Now, what do you think attracts the teal to that area?
Where they were sitting last time was basically the same thing. It's just that real shallow water and invertebrates.
Okay.
You know, it's on a flight line, and it's got the perfect water depth levels. It's not – I think at this time, that's the most of teal's diets is invertebrates.
All right.
So when those little blue wings can get in that 3 to 5 inch water and walk around in it and just siphon out those invertebrates.
Sure.
Because a lot of the stuff in here is deadish. Not as much as it was there. So they, you know, just you get that shallow water, you get the mud, and you get decaying plants. It's just a hotbed for invertebrates.
Right. So water depth is going to be a little shallower than what we're in today?
Yes. Mm-hmm, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. There's the way this thing runs, it's about 3/4 mile long, and there's one section in the middle where the water, so it's kind of thin water, like probably 80 yards wide, but then there's this one area towards the middle of the 3/4 mile where it goes up, the water goes up into the vegetation, and that's where it's really shallow.
Okay.
And so there's one little spot of, I'm not even sure what kind of vegetation it is, like waist chest deep, live vegetation. I don't remember if it's cattails or what it is. And right there, because I hunted this last weekend with Ben, and we were just in the wrong spot. And they were landing in the spot we're going to. So I don't think this place gets hunted very much at all. So I anticipate going in there and having a decent little hunt for sure. So
okay,
we'll set in that little green patch and put the decoys kind of out in front of that shallow water. And I think we'll probably do okay.
Same game plan, just a couple dozen decoys mm-hmm. and a couple of spinners.
Yep, same game. We may, I think we can still sit on our stools, but we might get down lower.
Okay.
I got tired of how we felt today, but yeah. We'll take all stools in there, and we can probably be on our stools.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think we'll get, don't even need a dog stand. Just, yeah, it'll be a nice and easy little half-mile walk. I think we'll get them. I think we'll shoot enough to be feeling like it was fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Pretty place. It's a real pretty place.
The only bad thing is tomorrow's my last hunt out west here, and I got to head back, but I'm going to make the most of it.
But you might get to see your first Chiefs games with actual Chiefs fans.
Yeah.
If you stick around.
We've got a few Chiefs fans back home. We watch some games with now and again. Okay. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but it'll be cool to be here and, you know, a stone's throw from Chiefs country. And
that's right.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. So I wanted to talk about your app a little bit more. I know last time I had you on, you got into the details a little bit. But now that we're in the hunting season, mm-hmm. I've been having a blast keeping yeah. track of my stats on there. It's super user-friendly. It's a lot of fun. You know, you see a lot of your friends on there, and a lot of people that I've had on the podcast are on there, and now Aiden I've got to know personally. It's fun to watch his stats on there now. Kind of break that down for our listeners who may not be familiar with it.
So the whole idea to start with is preserving your memories. That's why I started this thing. I started on an Excel spreadsheet because I wanted to be able to remember stuff about my hunt. And also, I just really like the numbers. I like to know how many birds I'm harvesting per year, what species am I taking, how many of each species. I just really like to keep track of that. And I like to set goals for myself. I like to set goals for shooting percentage or, you know, number of mallards versus hen ratio. So that's how the thing all started. I made it for myself on Excel. And then I was talking to my dad. I'm like, man, wouldn't it be awesome to make this, turn this into like a website? I wasn't even thinking an app at this time. Because it was, this Excel spreadsheet was super complex. And every year I was in over my head. I had figured out how to make it, but I was still in over my head with operating the thing. It just... So the app just makes it super simple. You name your own hunt. And the way I do it, I don't know how you name yours, but I'll do. So this year it's 24-25 hunt number one. And I might put the name of it after, a little signifier, like opening day with Brian or something. But typically it's like 24-25 hunt number one. You name it, then you assign a location, but you don't do it with a satellite imagery. You name it. So let's say I'm hunting Washington Lake. I might say Washington Lake dash Open Lake Point. And you name that and save that. And so then every time you hunt Washington Lake at that point, then you just click it. Excuse me. And that signifies you're hunting there. And then you put the date. You put the weather in. You put how many birds you harvested. If you want to keep track of shooting percentage, you can keep that. You don't have to. If you want to add photos, you can add photos to it. If you have a dog, you can add a little picture of your dog and do dog retrieves. You can keep track of how many people you're hunting with and what the group numbers are. So I'm going to go and put what my personal numbers were, how many blue wings I shot and whatever. Then on the next page, I'm going to put the group numbers. And so it's just going to keep over time how many birds that you shot per year, per species. And then there's a filtration system where you can go in and select, let's say, Washington Lake. So let's say I've got at Washington Lake, there's 10 little places inside of Washington Lake that I like to hunt. So I'm going to say Washington Lake Point, Washington Lake Browns Marsh, Washington's Lake, whatever. You can select all those and then hit the filter button, and you can see all of your numbers just at Washington Lake, broken down by, you know, all the little different spots. And then you can check, so how do I do at Washington Lake on sunny days? How do I do on cloudy days? How do I do on sunny days that are below 32 degrees? How do I do on a north wind sunny days? I mean, it's like you can really, really play with it. How do I do on days where at least one mallard drake's harvested? And I mean, you can really, I'm pushing 500 hunts that I personally have logged in this thing. So it gets to the point where I'm monitoring now my success levels at each location that I hunt. And also, I can look and break down how I do at those places with all the different variables. And I don't know how many people use the filters. I use them a ton because I just find it – so if I'm bored and I'm just thinking about duck hunting, I'll go in and, you know, like I haven't hunted this place we hunted again today for a long time. So tonight I'll probably just select that place and look and say over the last 13 years, oh, look how many – how I've done at this place.
Right.
And it's just, to me, it's really, really fun. And then you could go and select those hunts and look at all those pictures at that place. And then there's just so many things. There's like, you and I need to do this. I can create a crew, name it, and then I can invite you to it. And now I can see you're in my combined stats. So it'll show how many hunts you and I have been on, not necessarily together, but in 1 year. But so I can look at all of your stats except for location data. I can't see anything about the location data. But I can see how many hunts. So I can monitor you through the year, which I can do with Aiden because he and I are in a crew, where I can just go and see, oh, he's been on 13 hunts. Here's how he's doing, you know, which is really fun. Here's the group numbers. And I would like to add this which in there to where you can add a person. So, for example, I would put, who did you hunt with? I hunted with Brian Hallblein. What are your numbers when you're hunting with this individual? And that's not added. There's so many things that I'm going to add to that thing. And anything I want, I'm going to add. And there's lots of things shotguns, ammunition, gauges, satisfaction levels, types of motion and spinners, all that stuff's going to get added in there where it's just because this is just a toy for me.
Right.
That I've dumped way too much money into.
No, but it is a lot of fun. Like I said, it's my first season using it, and it's been a lot of fun following along.
And we even talk about the leaderboards, which is super fun.
Right. Yeah. Right, for sure.
Yeah.
So how can people find that?
It's on iOS or Android at The North American Waterfowler or the website, thenorthamericanwaterfowler.com. And if you log hunts on the website, it shows on the app. They're connected, but you can – the experience on the website's a little prettier, I would say, than on the app. But either place.
Okay. So you've been doing this YouTube game a long time, 10-year anniversary this year.
Year 10, yep, starting year 10.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, for sure. And watching you – this last couple of days, the amount of work that you put into this stuff, it obviously really shows in the finished product. Your podcasts and your YouTube videos are always top notch. People are always talking about them. It's like one of the go-tos when someone mentions a podcast or a YouTube channel.
Thank you.
So, talk about your journey with that. You know, how that's evolved in the last 10 years and where you plan on going with it from here.
Oh, man. I don't know how in-depth to get into that. So I just started hitting record because I wanted to preserve memories, essentially. And I had no idea when I started that I was trying to get other people to watch this. I just wasn't remembering my hunts. It was the same thing with the tracking stats. I just wanted to remember it more. And started putting it on YouTube. Had never uploaded anything. The hunt one was the first thing I'd ever uploaded to YouTube of any kind. I mean, I just didn't even know that was even a thing I could do, really. But and just started doing it and never stopped. And at some point, other people started watching. So I changed over to trying to make things for people. And it's been almost every single one of my hunts in the last 10 years. So almost 300. I've got way more than 300 videos, but probably about 300 hunts on YouTube.
Wow. And
yeah. So it's just really enriched my life. It's I still go back and watch my old hunts and relive them because that's why I did it. And that's still why I do it. And I go, in fact, they're on Roku on Duck Hunting TV. And I sometimes it just plays them random. Sometimes I'll just flip it on there and not even have the volume on just so I can look up and, oh, I remember that. Oh, I remember that. Cause it's really just about remembering. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anybody hasn't checked that out, make sure you go back. There's tons of playlists going back 10 years. You mm-hmm. can see the different seasons broken down. It's kind of fun to go back and watch from the beginning and watch your progression. I did that over the winter this past winter and really enjoyed watching a lot of those older ones I hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah, some of those old ones are some of the best ones.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, speaking of the YouTube channel, you know, you've got a lot going on with bonus footage that you're featuring over on your Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a part of Patreon for a few months now, and it's really cool what you got going on over there. You're kind of putting up this season a kind of, you know, short, fast video showing all the highlights of the hunt, and then you're kind of adding the bonus features and the bonus footage showing all the camping and the fun stuff that, you do over at Patreon, plus tons of other stuff on Patreon you got going on. You got the community chat. You got some different videos that you post for your scouting throughout the summer. Kind of walk us through that, how the Patreon's going and how people can tap into that.
So I started Patreon in 2016, and for years I just didn't – I couldn't quite ever configure it to be the way I really wanted it to, as far as how I was putting in content over there and what I was offering. And I feel like within the last 12 to 18 months, Patreon has become really the community that I was hoping that it would be. Like in the past, you know, 3-4 years ago, I'd put up something on there and you'd be lucky to get a single comment. It was just kind of dead because I was not configuring it and cultivating the community in the right way. So there wasn't really a lot of interaction. But now over on the communities tab, I check in like 4 days. I'm like, oh, there's like 15 other comments people have made. Or I posted a little video today and it posts and immediately there's 10 comments on it. So it's become a place where people go to interact with other people. It's not just a place, well, yeah, I kind of support this guy. And it's like an interactive community now. And one of the things you hit upon that I'm doing over there is the full length videos. YouTube waterfowl videos, if you really want to get maximum views, then it's like, well, let's start this hunt right now. You know, birds are being shot within a couple minutes versus some of my old videos, even I'd go 8-9 minutes of background stuff before you ever got to any kind of hunting. Well, YouTube doesn't really, I wouldn't say they penalize you for that, but YouTube is kind of short attention span theater. And so, for example, my videos on Roku, the average, if someone starts watching Duck Hunting TV on Roku, the average user watches it like 50 some minutes, almost an hour.
Mm.
On YouTube, the average length is like 7.5 minutes.
Jeez.
Isn't that ridiculous? Can you even, that is just enormous. Well, because on your phone, people are going to consume YouTube on the phone.
Right.
And that could be sitting there waiting in line to get your hair cut. Or you got 5 minutes here, you got 5 minutes there, you know. It's kind of like now we have like Instagram Reels, which is like really short attention span theater because, I mean, it actually wants you to quickly go through things you don't like. It wants you to – so it learns what you do and don't like. So it's just like training us to have these short 15-second bursts of watching something. And so the YouTube videos over the years, I just found myself more and more. It's like at the beginning of the video, you show something because a lot of times 40% of the audience on YouTube is going to be gone in the first 30 seconds. If you can have 70% of the audience still watching at 30 seconds, oh, that's a home run. If you're at – my goal is like if you get to the 50 mark in the video and 50% of the people are still watching, you're winning. Because a lot of like really successful videos I have, it's like, oh, the average person watches 35% of this. I mean, it's just crazy. So over the years, it just kind of teaches you, get to the hunt quick, cut out all the extra little fluff and keep people watching through the end. Now there is also some people are trending the opposite direction at times. Like if you look at Jordan, his last Timber Queen video was an hour. And he's doing more longer length things in August. And so there is a time and a place for some of the longer length things. But for the most part, like if you look at one of the most successful right now, one of the most successful waterfowl YouTubers is Hyper Sportsman. I mean, if you look video per video, how many views he gets, and his videos are this perfect little package where it's like to the point, perfectly well done. It's like a little perfectly wrapped gift. His videos, sure. They're wonderful.
Yeah, they are.
And he's like maximizing the number of views he's getting. But there's also a certain number of people that really want to get to know you as an individual and as a person. And so, which if you watch the first four seasons of FDH, that's what it is. It's a lot of.
Absolutely.
In fact, season one, there's hardly any kill shots at all. Every video is just basically, my goal was, I just want you to experience the hunt like I experienced the hunt. It's a skunk, you're going to see it. If it's a great hunt, you're going to see it. and that was fine early on, but as you get more and more and more waterfowl creators, the, you know, you're saturating YouTube with it. So I started playing the algorithm game a little bit, and you just sometimes, I mean, when you're filming hunt after hunt after hunt after hunt, sometimes you just want to pick up the camera and put it there and get what you get and go. I mean, it's hard to just have all this extra stuff, but ultimately, like, when you and I go on the experience we went on yesterday, I want to have that on video for myself, and I people that like that stuff, I want them to be able to see it. So now that full-length video is going on Patreon, where hunt number one was 13 minutes on YouTube, 21 minutes on Patreon. And then when I go back to watch that hunt, I'm watching the 21-minute version because that's going to show me what I personally really want to see. And people that enjoy that personal connection, long they can get that over at Patreon. That was a long-winded way to answer that question. I am so long-winded when it comes to this stuff.
That's good. That's what we like to hear. So the last thing I want to wrap up with, you and I have talked previously on our podcast and off, and we had a chance to talk a little bit about our faith around the campfire last night. It's just something that I appreciate about our friendship,
right?
That we can share that common ground of our relationship with Jesus Christ. And
absolutely,
you know, you inspire me by putting yourself out there on your podcast and saying to people, hey, if you ever want to talk about it, if you have any questions, send me an email, send me a message. Mm-hmm. And it was very inspiring that you had that contact and God opened that door for you. So,
and I've been inspired by others like Jake from Chasing Green to do those things. It's right. Like, and that's why having these male Christian friends is so important, because you just make each other stronger Christian men.
Absolutely.
Is the way it works.
Yeah. So anybody out there that listens to my podcast and never hears me talk about scripture or my journey with my relationship with Jesus Christ, or if you listen to Elliot's podcast, he does the same thing. Feel free to reach out. You know, we don't have all the answers, but, you know, we're happy to talk to you about it and try to learn together and strengthen our relationship with God together.
Amen to that. 100%.
Well, my friend, is there anything else? You know, let everybody know where they can find you before we wrap this up.
Yep, Freelance Duck Hunting, North American Waterfowler app and podcast on all the outlets, and Freelance Duck Hunting on Instagram.
Well, again, I can't thank you enough for your hospitality here in Kansas and the fun adventures that you've provided so far, and we've got one more tomorrow. So
yep, and it will be an adventure. It will.
Absolutely.
We'll be on that boat in the dark.
All right. Well, I appreciate you all joining us again for another episode. We'll catch you next week on another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Huge thanks again to Elliot for inviting me to hunt in Kansas with him. And thanks to his family for welcoming me into their home for a few days. It was an amazing experience. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. I really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Migration Waterfowl. We also have a Facebook group for the podcast. Please join us there as well. And if you could, please check out our YouTube channel and subscribe while you are there. Lots of great content coming that way throughout the rest of the year. You can find links to our merchandise store on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, thermoses, coffee, and more over there. And now through the end of September, 10% of everything we sell will go to Ducks Unlimited. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify,
or wherever you get your podcasts. Send me a message or email after you leave the review, and I will mail you a podcast decal. And get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. Titus chapter 3, verses 5 through 7 says, "He saved us, not because of works done by us in righteousness, but according to his own mercy, by the washing of regeneration and renewal of the Holy Spirit, whom he poured out on us richly through Jesus Christ, our Savior, so that being justified by his grace, we might become heirs according to the hope of eternal life." And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.